Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, bearing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A Florida jury finds Casey Anthony not guilty of murder. News of the World journalists illegally hack into the voicemail of a missing 11-year-old girl, and a Malala man is shot after being mistaken for a cougar.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, July 6th, 2011. A sex offender who was chatting up children at a Clackamas Aquatic Center was arrested over the weekend after being chased by a bystander. Thomas Benson was booked into jail on charges of unlawful contact with a child, unlawfully being in a location where children congregate, third-degree robbery, and attempted unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. On a busy day, which was Friday, at the Aquatic Center on Harmony Road, Milwaukee, Benson wore women's clothing when he went into an occupied girls' locker room and also into a hot tub, according to Clackamas County Sheriff's deputies. They say that Benson also engaged several young children in conversation in the area. Teo Cotton, a 26-year-old Portland man who was supervising a summer field trip at the pool, told deputies he witnessed Benson leaving the girls' dressing room. He tried to stop Benson as he left the aquatic center, but deputies say Benson realized he was being followed and then started to run. The foot chase took Cotton and Benson through Clackamas Town Center's parking lot and through the Sears department store.
In heels as well.
Before they exited the mall on the north side of the Sears store, Cotton told deputies he saw Benson try to open several car doors during the foot chase, and that Benson eventually reached through an open window in a car's back door and opened it. Cotton grabbed Benson by the shoulders and pulled him away from the car as sheriff's deputies arrived at the scene. Benson, who lives in Gresham, was wearing a bra, lipstick, eyeliner, and a bandage between his upper lip and nose, which you can see in the mugshot that we have so helpfully provided for you.
To cover his mustache? Please tell me it's so.
Oh, God, maybe.
Why else would that be there?
I saw the mugshot, and I just assumed he got punched while he was being arrested.
It's not like that's also not possible.
But the two notable things of his mugshot, the mustache under the nose, and he looks really, really pleased with himself.
Does he look even passingly like a woman?
No.
I mean, does he bear even the vaguest resemblance to an actual female?
No.
Okay, all right.
Fantastic. But he also just looks, like, happy to be there.
This
is the best day of his life.
That is really strange. Well, I mean, maybe he figures that this is... Honestly, I have no idea what I was going to end that sentence with. I have no idea why he would look this way.
Well, it's one more to check off the bucket list.
Seriously. You can see this will be posted momentarily at rickemerson.com/pictures.
It is rickemerson.com/pictures, and you go to visual aids for July 6th. You can see a photo of this altogether creepy individual. Jesus, God. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for... you know, he looks... Here's the thing about him is he looks sort of strangely like... he kind of looks like a younger Phil Spector, but he just has that... I mean... He does have a sort of, I'm not in the same universe and on the same plane of existence as the rest of you sort of look on his face.
No, Jesus. No, and he has that that sort of, if you put your hand over, it's like one side of his face looks very different from the other side of his face kind of thing.
Jesus.
But yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A Florida jury has found Casey Anthony not guilty of murder in connection with the 2008 death of her 2-year-old daughter, Kaylee. The jury also declined to convict the 25-year-old of aggravated child abuse or aggravated manslaughter.
They did find her hot, though.
Yeah. The jurors did, however, return a guilty verdict on the lowest of the four charges she faced, providing false information to police. She faces up to 4 years in prison for that. Cindy Anthony testified she was the one who did internet searches for chloroform from her home computer when it was proven she was at work during the time of those searches. Former prosecutor Holly Hughes was asked if the perjury charges could stick.
Technically speaking, under the law, yes, because I think they've got enough proof to show it's a specific intent crime. You're going to have to prove to your jury or your judge she willfully did this. She meant to lie.
Hughes says the charges are not likely.
No matter what we think of Cindy Anthony, she is a victim here. She is a grieving grandmother, and at this point, all she was trying to do was save her daughter's life, and it worked. At this point, I think any prosecution is going to look like sour grapes, quite frankly, so I don't think we're going to see it happen.
It's going to be an odd conversation when you talk to your mom and you say, look, if anybody should ask about chloroform searches on the internet, just say you did that. Why?
Yeah.
No reason. Just, you know, just say that that was you, and I'll make it up to you later.
Yeah, Anthony's defense lawyers maintained the girl's body was found in the woods 6 months after she went missing 3 years ago. Medical examiners were never able to determine how she died. Anthony's defense lawyers maintained the girl drowned accidentally in the family's swimming pool and that instead of reporting her death, Casey Anthony, quote, went into a dark corner to pretend as if nothing was wrong. Prosecutors, however, argued that Kaylee was drugged with chloroform, then suffocated with duct tape by her hard-partying mother, who crafted complex lies to hide the crime. Her attorney conceded during the trial that the client had told elaborate lies, even inventing a fake father for her daughter, but said that didn't mean she was a murderer. The defense argued that Anthony was so adept at lying because she'd been trained to lie as a result of years of sexual abuse at the hands of her father.
Really, lying about the identity of your kid's father just means that you're from Florida. Or possibly Lentz. I mean, it's not like that... Really, if everybody who lied about, you know, the parentage or the origination point of a child was guilty of something, honestly, it like half the state would be locked up. Also, it seems like chloroform and duct tape, that's a belt and suspenders approach anyway. Like, I don't think you would need both of those. That's a one or the other kind of a thing.
Yeah,
how strong could a kid, you know, 2-year-old be?
Chloroform should do the trick.
Yes. I mean, really, if you still need duct tape on your 2-year-old after chloroform, you're doing it wrong. I mean, you're doing it wrong in hundreds of ways, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You're doing everything in your life wrong.
Yeah.
You're doing every single thing in your life wrong.
I think that pretty much just getting up in the morning, she was wrong.
Seriously. We have, I think next hour there's some additional, we have some sound on that from Marcia Clark.
Oh.
Yeah. That's next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
You really have a thing for women who look like they could just like open up their jaw and eat your face.
Yes, I do.
You?
Yes, I do, Don. I'm unashamed of that.
A long-running phone hacking scandal in Britain has plagued one of Rupert Murdoch's British tabloids, and it has taken a bizarre twist. Journalists at the News of the World allegedly hacked into the voicemail of an abducted teenage girl. They say a teenage. I thought she was 11. Anyway. Giving her family false hope that she was alive and possibly hampering a police investigation. The Guardian newspaper this week alleged that News Corp's News of the World, the largest circulation Sunday newspaper in the UK, paid an investigator to intercept voicemail messages on the mobile phone, okay, she was 13, of 13-year-old Millie Dowler after her disappearance in 2002. A man was convicted of killing her in June, but just days after her abduction, as police were scrambling to find Millie, the newspaper's investigator hacked into her phone. Hungry to hear more voicemails that might contain newsworthy information, the investigator erased her messages once the mailbox was full. That led Dowler's parents to believe she might be deleting her own voicemail messages, therefore was still alive, and convinced she was still alive, they gave an interview to News of the World. The editor at the time was Rebecca Brooks. She's now top executive at Murdoch's News International, which oversees News of the World and The Sun. Where's my stuff here? The British newspaper is also facing allegations that they hacked into the voicemails of celebrities, and actor Hugh Grant is furious.
What we need is a big public inquiry into all the methods and the whole culture of tabloid press in this country. And people can vote very much with their wallets. You know, they just don't have to buy these papers, especially the News of the World.
Why would you be hacking it? I mean, what are you going to get out of Hugh Grant's voicemail?
I mean, yeah, what is he doing we don't know about already?
I mean, honestly, it doesn't seem like he's going to be... Yeah, he's not going to be like a fountain of previously unrevealed indiscretions.
You don't know. What is he up to that we don't know about?
I guess
maybe that was just the tip of a very kinky iceberg.
I guess you don't know unless you check. Really, that is the thing where one must be sure and thorough.
Well, Grant wants a full-scale judicial investigation.
It's all our tabloids who've been shockingly out of control for a long time. And when you realize how much collusion has been from the police and how much collusion has been from our lawmakers, from our government, who need these tabloids to get elected, you start to think, I'm not proud of my country anymore.
Yeah, British tabloids are kind of insane.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do make American press outlets look fairly reserved. And it is not a coincidence that all of the most vile and reprehensible American print outlets are owned by British companies or modeled on British newspapers. That's not a coincidence.
Well, it's especially interesting since they have such crazy strict libel laws there. And so...
Well, that's why they're always following you, though, because they can't just make stuff up. I think that one causes the other. Like, in America, you can just go, well, we heard from a guy that Dawn goes home and jams cocaine into her ears. You know, and then you sue them and suddenly you own the newspaper. In Britain, they can't just say that. They got to have photographs of you doing it, which is why everywhere you go, there will be 1,000 photographers behind you, because they got to have visual proof.
So past victims of people... of hacking people employed by the News of the World included Sienna Miller, who was one of Hugh Grant's people, Princes William and Harry, soccer stars, cabinet secretaries, and members of parliament. Several MPs told the BBC they were fearful enough of the reach of the newspaper's investigators that they held back from supporting more rigorous investigation of the company's practices. So it's like, you know, well, we're not going to look into what you're doing because you might look at me.
I don't know where you're getting these tips from, so I'm not going to, but I like them.
Two men have been jailed, one a private investigator, another a former editor for the tabloid. One of Brooks' former newsroom deputies resigned as communications director because of his links to the scandal. The private investigator involved, Glenn Mulcair, issued a statement from prison apologizing for his actions and blaming relentless pressure from the paper. According to The Guardian, police determined the mobile phones of parents of two other murdered girls were also hacked by investigators for News of the World, and investigators are reviewing other high-profile cases.
I was ill-prepared for this because in an alternate universe where I had, where I was more aware of what was going to be coming down the pike at me, aurally speaking, you would have said something about hacking into the voicemails of members of parliament, and then I would have played a Bootsy Collins song for just like 5 seconds, and it would have been hilarious. So everybody just sort of mentally insert that in your head.
You should have those things like always on. You need a much bigger soundboard, I think.
Seriously,
and you always have those things.
Something that is just George Clinton in parliament.
Yeah. All right. Well, this year's 4th of July hot dog eating contest, we failed to mention yesterday, on Coney Island, has had a women's only segment. Sonia Thomas and 9 other women competed Monday before the men's feast. Thomas set the world's record for eating 41 hot dogs in 10 minutes previously.
It seems like that's the kind of thing that really ought to be on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
If you're going to be some chick eating a hot dog 41 times, you could probably sell that to guys.
And then, of course, Joey Chestnut competed last year. He ate his way to a 4th consecutive championship by downing 54. And yet, notably absent again this year was Takeru Kobayashi, who held the world record for 6 years because he's still been banned for refusing to sign an exclusive contract with Major League Eating.
Did he show up again with a shirt with his own face on it, chanting his own name?
I don't know. I hope so.
That was the high point of 2010. I think it was 2000. It was either 2009 or 2010, where he got arrested, or it's like they hauled him off to the pokey somehow because he was there, and I think he was shouting "Free Kobayashi" at one point.
Yeah.
And it was like, And he was like wearing a shirt that had his own portrait on the front of it, which was sort of glorious in a kind of WWE kind of a way. So Joey Chestnut is really on his way to becoming the Lance Armstrong of competitive eating. I mean, he seems to be hand down not just the American champion, but he's the champion of eaters everywhere, all over the globe.
And apparently, yes, he did win this year as well. He ate 62 hot dogs in 10 minutes, making that his fifth straight win.
Fantastic. You know, that really is. And here's the thing. That is why the rest of the world really does envy and loathe us right there. The idea that a guy is just sitting down and eating 62 hot dogs at a stretch, not even really enjoying them, not even really tasting, not savoring, no mustard of any kind, not toasting the buns, just immediately in the, you know, down the hatch.
Maybe dipping it in water to help it go down a little bit faster.
The thing that I just can't pay. That's why I could never be a competitive eater, because I'm very sensitive to texture. Mm-hmm. And even if you're only tasting it for just a second, it's like the idea that you're just jamming a bunch of watery bread into your mouth is the thing I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I can't get with that.
There's also some do the bread and hot dogs separately technique as well. Yeah. Or eat the hot dog. Water, you know, sog up the bun, jam down the bun.
No, it just violates my delicate sensibilities.
Okay. A 56-year-old Malala man was taken to the hospital after he was shot by his brother-in-law, who mistook him for a cougar. Clackamas County deputies said 56-year-old Carl Klein was hit in the forearm by a rifle round just after 10 p.m. while in a field on South Furman Road. Deputy said Virgil Foster, that would be his brother-in-law, fired one round from his rifle at what he believed was a cougar. Klein yelled out, and Foster then went out to help him after realizing that it happened.
Dadgummit, I ain't no grizzly bear! Or whatever.
Yeah.
What he thought
I
was
ain't no cougar!
Did he first think it was... So he first thought it was a bear, or he thought it was a cougar all along?
Yes, he thought it was a cougar all along.
Well, how did he...
The word bear never came into the story at all until you mentioned it.
I guess I inserted that myself because I don't understand. I get how you could go from thinking it was one kind of animal to thinking it was another kind of animal. But... absent any other information. In other words, he wasn't hunting animals.
No.
So it wasn't like he was out deer hunting and then his brother was there and he went, you know, I thought you were a deer or a horny toad or a cougar. He heard a noise and immediately leapt to cougar.
Well, perhaps there had been sightings of a cougar recently. Maybe a cougar had been taking their chickens from the hen house. Maybe a cougar had been menacing their llama. I have no idea. But so this guy became obsessed with the idea of cougars. Every rustle of the bushes, he's just hearing cougars. He knows that the woods are a swarm with cougars. His brother, he takes a nap on the couch. He's dozing. Brother goes out to like maybe get a little wood from the fire pile. Makes a little noise. Guy wakes up, springs to his feet. Cougar! And then shoots the first thing moving, and it turns out that it was Carl.
See, because that's why that's weird, because otherwise it implies that the brother has some sort of particular or unique gait that is easily confused with that of a cougar.
Or perhaps he's a shapeshifter, and it turned into a cougar, and it afeared his brother-in-law, and now they're just telling this story to try and cover up the fact that, you know, that he's like a were-cougar.
Let me ask you this. What is it in the world? You were talking about this at the True Blood recap yesterday. What is a skinwalker?
That is the... It's kind of your werewolf. Only in the Native American mythos.
Is that it's like Stephanie Meyer slang for werewolf?
No, it's Native American term for sort of your werewolves. You're kind of monstrous, otherworldly beings that can look like men, but they can look like animals.
All right. Skinwalker is a singularly unpleasant word.
It is.
It really... Skinwalker sounds like... I don't even know what it is. It just seems horrible. It seems...
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like what it is, but it does sound like something that you don't want to know anything about. It sounds like something you don't want any part of.
It's not a good thing.
No.
It's not something something you want.
No. Skinwalker sounds like some sort of a parasitic South American spider that would be on your ankle when you woke up.
Yeah.
Like a crate or something.
Like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Emerson. A skinwalker burrowed in there while you were sleeping.
We're going to have to set your leg on fire.
Yeah.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. And your first week is free, after which you will not even be able to conceive how your life functioned without that glorious beam of auditory sunshine. Today we have a Taser Watch coming up, Job Watch coming up. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian is going to be with us today, and we'll have another installment of the greatest songs ever made. That is all coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com.
An Oregon man has been arrested for threatening to kill President Barack Obama and his family. Daryl James Swanson made his first court appearance yesterday and was detained for a mental health evaluation. He did not enter a plea. The U.S. Secret Service arrested the 45-year-old Portland man on Friday in connection with the threats. Court documents show that Swanson admitted calling the Associated Press on May 2nd and leaving a message using a racial epithet and saying he would seek weapons from Al-Qaeda to shoot the president and his family. The documents show a Secret Service agent warned Swanson against threatening the president, but he continued to leave messages with government and law enforcement agencies in Florida, Oregon, and Washington.
This really does demonstrate, I think, an amazing tolerance on the part of law enforcement that we don't typically assume is there. The idea that the guy says not only, A, I'm going to whack him and his family, but then goes so far as to specify that he will be getting the weapons from Al-Qaeda. And still the Secret Service guy's like, you know, look, let's just call this a bad day. You go your way, I'll go mine. We won't come to your house and beat you into splinters.
Yeah, sir, please, just
shut knock
up.
It off.
Just stop.
It's been a long week. Just sleep it off. And then, you know, that really, I mean, that's like getting all three strikes at once. And, you know, and then coming back for more. Yeah, all right.
The last line of the story, by the way, a family friend says Swanson is harmless.
Yes, I would imagine he's harmless now that he's living in such a small steel cage. You are listening to Legion of News. Coming up later on this hour, your Science on the March, also entertainment news and whatnot. Here's Don Taylor.
Area animal shelters are being slammed with stray animals terrified by fireworks, along with heartbroken pet owners looking for their pets. Deborah Wood, manager of Washington County Animal Services, said, Washington County has pretty much been a war zone for the last few days. In just the last 4 days, some 60 runaway dogs and cats have come into the Bonnie Hayes Animal Shelter in Hillsboro. Wood said the way the 4th of July is celebrated now, we can expect a lot of booms and pops and whistles for the next few days.
Keep your pets inside, for the love of Christ. They're called doors.
And also, 4th of July is over. Stop with the goddamn fireworks.
Yeah, I just assume that it's gunfire just being rattled into the sky all day and night.
The shelter says if you've lost a dog or cat, the first thing you should do is check not only with your county's animal shelter, but with surrounding counties as well. If you've found a stray dog or cat in your neighborhood, bring it to the shelter. Many shelters, like the Bonnie Hayes Shelter, post pictures of stray dogs and cats they're sheltering on their websites. Pet owners can check the site several times a day to see if their lost animal has turned up.
I full-on have the microchip in Max and Philo, which is awesome. Which, you know, not that I want them to vanish, but it would again, it's, you know, some alternate universe, it would almost be interesting if they did, just so you can get the, you know, because in my mind's eye, it's like a full-on, it's like a Demolition Man thing where they bring up the screen and it's like in Sector 5. You know, it's like Max is spotted knocking over a liquor store somewhere and they, like, send in the SWAT team.
Philo is just under a bush.
It's like just twitching and just vibrating. Let's see. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Because they don't do that. It's not like a tracking thing as such. It's just like so they can identify it, though.
Yeah.
That's what the chip is now in your pet, where it's like they scan it or whatever, and it says it has your name and your phone number.
Yeah, it's like a barcode. Yeah.
Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A 31-year-old Mesa man unsuccessfully attempted to dive into his pool from the roof of his single-story house last week.
When you say unsuccessfully.
Yeah, unsuccessfully.
Do you mean like he hit the pool, but ooh, the death?
I mean, I don't think he hit the pool at all.
How hard is... Okay. Well, it's obviously harder than he was able to...
Yeah. The man was found with a head injury when firefighters arrived at the home. When making the dive, the man hit the pavement before falling into the pool.
Here's your problem right here, sir.
Yeah. Family members quickly pulled him out, and he was later airlifted to Scottsdale Healthcare Osborne Medical Center. This marks the second such incident in which rural metro firefighters in Arizona have responded. Last week, an 18-year-old pulled a similar stunt in Fountain Hills. He was unable to be revived and died at the scene.
How hard is it, honestly, though, to hit your... If you're just on the roof, it's like the pool is right there.
Well, to be fair, if you've ever been, like, say, in a hotel and you're on a hotel balcony and you look down, you go, the pool's right there. It is actually further out than it looks when you're up high.
But they're not at a hotel. Wasn't it like at his house?
No, but you made this judge, and I'm sure there's probably alcohol involved.
It seems like. And where was this at?
That was a single-story home in Arizona.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not
I know.
Not like in the Hollywood Hills where he's leaping off the top of it, you know. A single-story home, it seems like you get a running start as well, and that, you know.
Well, he may not have done that. He may have just jumped off the roof and then gone, I'll make it. And
Well, you can't do that.
No.
I mean, it's like, you know, Bob Beeman. You can't just do like a, you know, you can't just do a dead jump or whatever, the dead start of it. You got to get a little momentum, inertia. That's what you got to look for.
The entire thing, to me, seems ill-advised.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, or advised, depending on how
jumping
likely.
Jumping off of something into other stuff is usually, you know, with the exception of, say, diving boards directly over pools, it's not usually a good idea.
No, and yet... And yet it's one of those things that the people, especially guys, and especially when they're younger, just are irresistibly drawn to for some reason. My younger brother and I used to occasionally, and this just makes me sound like an idiot, which I suppose I was, slash M, we would just while away the long Kennewick afternoons just leaping off the roof of our house.
Well, there isn't a lot else to do in Kennewick.
Yeah, I mean, not on to anything, not like, you know... Not affixing a cape to ourselves and imagining that we were, that we were saving Metropolis. Just let's just enjoy the pull of gravity, you know, as its own reward. And so I would leap off the house, I would land on the lawn, I would walk around, I would climb up to that, do it again, rinse, wash, repeat, over and over and over again, for no readily apparent reason. I was not gaining. I wasn't even like it wasn't even part of some larger game where we were like pretending, you know, that that we were superheroes or something.
There was no point structure involved. You weren't was
no. We weren't even competing. It wasn't like we were marking our spaces, or we were, you know.
It wasn't like a full contact game of horse.
No. It was just falling as its own activity.
Hmm.
Not very bright was I.
No.
Yes.
Let's do science.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You can also go the telephonic route and call them at 503-252-1609. If you like, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That means that if you're going to be moving into a place and it does not suit your purposes, it doesn't fit your needs, they can't handle what it is that you plan to do, which I guess makes it sound more nefarious than you probably want to sound. But you know, if you're planning on being a supervillain of some kind, and you got to get one of those giant screens that goes up on the wall so you can address all the leaders of the world and demand jillions of dollars, or perhaps see where your nuclear first strike is going to land after you hack into NORAD.
Or your sliding floor that opens at the push of a button to reveal your sharks.
Exactly. You want that? I mean, or just the big blinking panel with a whole lot of glowing squares that go on and off in random patterns for no readily apparent reason. You know, that stuff, it's not like you can just run that, you know, like out of a single outlet with a power squid or something. You know, you got to get that taken care of. So you talk to Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, or if you've got any sort of repair or upgrade or installation at your home or business, get that taken care of by going to SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You know, there you can see unsolicited testimonials from Americans just like you. That is SquiresElectric.com. Proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
The Daily Telegraph reports that paleontologists in Queensland, Australia, have unearthed a nearly complete skeleton of a wombat-like creature known as a diprotodon. Scientists say the find is one of Australia's most significant prehistoric discoveries.
Realize that calling something wombat-like doesn't help me at all.
Oh. Well, then the rest of the story is going to mean nothing to you.
That's like saying it looks just like a diplodocus.
Well, why did you...
What the hell does that mean?
Google,
what is a wombat?
Google, it's a marsupial.
Okay, that... Okay, also
it's,
not helping.
It's a wombat. It doesn't really look like anything other than a wombat.
Everything looks like something, Don.
Okay, it has kind of bat-ish... It's like a koala with kind of bat-like
ears. Does it fly?
No.
Okay.
No?
You don't know what a wombat is, do you?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Is it small?
Yes. Yeah, they're fairly small.
Is it smaller than a bread box?
Depends the size of your bread box. No, I probably not.
My bread box is huge, Don.
I believe wombats are slightly smaller than koalas.
Okay, all right. Looking it up right now.
Okay. Anyway, Sue Hand, one of the researchers involved in the discovery, said it was the biggest of them all, the biggest marsupial that ever lived on any continent. It was a bit like a wombat, but looked more like a massive rhino-type beast. We found the skull and jaws, as well as most of the rest of the skeleton. It's a really good specimen. The animal, which had enormous tusks and a small brain, walked the Australian continent about 2.5 million years ago. Scientists believe the animal succumbed to extinction about 55,000 years ago due to either the arrival of the first indigenous peoples, climate change, or some combination of the two. So are you
By the way, I'm looking at pictures of wombats. These are adorable.
Aren't they?
I demand a wombat for Christmas.
All marsupials are adorable.
Is this going to be one of those things, though, where it's adorable, but then it, like, eviscerates me when I'm not looking?
I don't think so. I don't know. The other thing is most of your marsupials tend to be kind of, like, cranky.
Seriously,
well.
if you go to Google Images and just put in the word wombat, it's like the first 15 photographs, I mean, the awe sort of effect generated by these cannot be overstated. Really, the if there was a studio audience right now, it would just be doing one long sigh that just went on and on.
Yeah, and they're also, they live out in the outback, so like dingoes and Tasmanian devils like try to eat them.
This is not at all what I would think this creature looked like based on the fact that it's called a wombat. I mean, I didn't think it was a bat as such, but I thought it would be sort of you think wombat, you think it's going to be freaky looking or it's going to be terrifying in some way.
It's an Aboriginal word. All of their words are kind of strange. But because they don't have a tail.
It's like a tiny bear.
Yeah, it's like a tiny little like a panda is a marsupial as well.
So. Oh, look at his delicate little feet.
Is this a panda marsupial?
Sorry.
Yes, it is. But yeah, they have like really apparently super, super tough hide made out of cartilage on their butts and no tail. So when things try to bite them and eat them, they can't like bite them on their butt because they have these super hard cartilage under their fur. But they're adorable. Anyway, this is like a wombat only that was like enormous, the size of a rhino, and had tusks.
A giant wombat, bigger than you.
They also found the tooth of a giant goanna, which is a type of lizard that may have eaten part of this giant wombat thing. So,
I got to quit staring at pictures of wombats, so that's going to be my whole day now.
Wombats are adorable.
Wombat could be the new hedgehog, Don. All right, there's your wombat news for today.
Results of DNA tests are back for the emperor penguin, nicknamed Happy Feet, whose plight has been followed around the world since he was found stranded on a New Zealand beach 2 weeks ago. Wellington Zoo spokeswoman Kate Baker says scientists determined the penguin's sex after scraping cells from his feathers. Male and female emperor penguins outwardly appear identical. Baker said Tuesday the penguin is recovering nicely after 4 medical procedures to flush sand and debris from his stomach. Happy Feet is now eating more than 4 pounds of salmon each day.
Wait, who had sand flushed out of his stomach?
Happy Feet. He's the little penguin that was saved in New Zealand. He was found stranded on a New Zealand beach a couple of weeks ago, and they saved him.
Right.
Yeah, and he was really, really super sick, but now he's doing much better. But he had all kinds of sand and debris and stuff in his stomach, and they had to flush it out.
Why was he eating sand?
Probably because there was nothing. He was stranded. He was probably almost drowned. He, like, sucked it down in.
Oh, I see. Okay. I have two things here. First of all, A, somebody says, by somebody I mean Cheryl, sends me messages with barely concealed glee that apparently we brought back the ignorant radio host hashtag because of the wombat conversation. But I do have to note, wombats, not marsupials. Dawn.
Yeah, they are.
They are not.
Yes, they are.
They're rodents. They are not marsupials, says Thomas Gill.
Thomas Gill is wrong. They are marsupials.
Really? How much would you like? Let me ask you this. What do we get if you're wrong? Without looking it up, without looking at the internet, what do I get to do if you're wrong? You should have to do push-ups right here in front of me.
Oh, I can't do push-ups.
Well, then, so you're not very not very confident in your answer, then.
You could smack me in the top of the head.
I know, but you'd like that.
Not necessarily. Not on the head.
You should have to forfeit the rest of your Arnold Palmer.
Okay.
Okay. How much is left there? How much is in there?
About a third. I will give up the rest of my iced tea if I am wrong about it being a marsupial.
All right, hold on. And we haven't done the both sides of this equation here. Let's see. Wait, let me look. Hold on. Ah, no. See, we're both right and both wrong here. So, this is actually me. So, it actually is a double ignorant radio host thing. Because you are actually correct, and so is Thomas. It's that I read his comment incorrectly.
Oh.
See, too late do you realize that I don't have to do anything for being wrong.
Oh.
I just get the ignorant radio host hashtag.
You could apologize.
No, yes. No, this is, well, that's not going to happen, obviously. This is weird. So what I misread is, I misread his comment, and his comment actually says, pandas are not marsupials, they are rodents. Why were we talking about pandas?
Well, because I said something about pandas, and then I said they're marsupials, and then I thought about it for a second. I said, are they? And then I was confused for a moment, because I believe...
Is this because I said they look like tiny bears?
Yeah. And I know, and then I got that whole koala thing caught my head, because people call koalas bears and koalas are marsupials. And then somehow I ended up conflating koalas and pandas for a second. So.
This is so confusing. So you really should have pressed your advantage there, though. Because then I would have to give you something right now, or I would have to let you punch me in the face or pull up my teeth or whatever it is you would have asked for.
Huh.
See, and the thing is, And I totally would have dug myself in too deep because I had misread Thomas Gill's comment. And I, of course, as you know, he's the gold standard for veracity in this fading republic of ours. And so I would have been hoisted by my own petard.
I have to admit, I was shocked for a moment that Thomas Gill would say something incorrect like that. And yet, of course, he did not.
No, he did not. He just affected me, Smeghead. Excellent. Thank you, sir. All right, here's Don Taylor.
All right, done with the penguin. The U.S. government has warned domestic and international airlines that some terrorists are considering surgically implanting explosives into humans to carry out attacks. This is reported by the Associated Press. There's no intelligence pointing to a specific plot, but the U.S. shared its concerns last week with executives at domestic and international carriers. People traveling to the U.S. from overseas may experience additional screening at airports because of the threat, according to the TSA. TSA spokesman Nick Kimball said, "These measures are designed to be unpredictable, so passengers should not expect to see the same activity at every international airport. Measures may include interaction with passengers, in addition to use of other screening methods, such as pat-downs and the use of enhanced tools and technologies. Placing explosives and explosive components inside humans to hide bombs and evade security is not a new idea, but there is new intelligence pointing to a fresh interest in using this tactic." The official with the U.S. Security Office spoke on condition of anonymity and said when the U.S. government receives information regarding terror tactics, the TSA alerts companies domestically and abroad. So, yeah.
This is like that third season of Alias where Sydney looks down and she sees that the guy is having a bomb implanted inside his ribcage.
Oh.
It's just like that.
Is it exactly like that?
Yes.
Huh, I know. And finally, an infant's environment may be just as important as genetics in determining the risk of developing autism, according to a new study. The study from Stanford and the University of California, San Francisco, looked at 192 pairs of twins, both identical and fraternal, and used a mathematical model to project that environmental factors accounted for as much as 55% of the risk of developing autism. Over the past decade, autism research has focused heavily on the potential genetic causes of the condition, but the new study suggests a child's environment plays a much more significant role than scientists once thought. We're not trying to say that there isn't a genetic component, quite the opposite, said Neil Reich of the Institute for Human Genetics. But for most individuals with autism spectrum disorder, it's not simply a genetic cause. Twins are helpful to researchers studying heritable disorders like autism because they often highlight the roles genetics and environment play in a child's development. Identical twins share nearly 100% of their genes, and fraternal twins share about half their genes. If raised together, both kinds of twins are usually exposed to similar environments. If autism were entirely genetic, the presence of the disorder in one identical twin would nearly guarantee its presence in the other. But the results of the study showed that if one identical twin had autism, the chance of the other twin having the disorder was only around 60 to 70%.
Here's something I'd like everybody to start doing as of now. Refer to really, really attractive women as being diagnosed with hotism. Sam.
And then you could gauge where they are on the hotism spectrum.
That's what I'm saying. We just begin that like today. Yeah. Just, everybody just go forth and make it so. Is that the end of science?
Oh, God, yes.
All right, there you go. There's your Science of the March. Brought to you by Squires Electric. That is SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical and sellers, contractors, and supervisors.
Now I'm looking at pictures of wombats.
You know why? Because they rate high on the autism scale. You stepped on my Aussie. You stepped on my punchline.
I did.
Two autism jokes in a row.
I know.
Right there. How often does that happen? Not very often.
They got like little pig noses.
Aren't they
look
fantastic?
Like tiny bears.
They look like, they honestly do look like golden bears that have just been sort of shrunk down. And there's several pictures, by the way, of children holding them and not bleeding or screaming.
No.
So it seems like they might be friendly.
No.
Or that's what they want us to think anyway. So good enough for me. There's your Science of the March. Here's Don Taylor.
Facebook is announcing a new video chat feature. Company founder Mark Zuckerberg says he's teaming up with Skype to provide a streamlined system for video chatting.
The system already knows that we're connected, and we already have a pipe open between us, so new apps like video chat can just flow across that. It's not the case like with traditional Skype, where both people have to have downloaded Skype beforehand.
Speaking of being on the spectrum.
Zuckerberg says this will allow for video chatting, even if only one person in the conversation initially has video capabilities downloaded.
Now, hasn't that always been the case on the internet? I mean, it's not like, not always, not like, you know, like forever, but I mean, within the last few years. I mean, it's not like both people had to have. In other words, 5 years ago, if you were just some chick in Des Moines and you were going to, like, I don't know, you know, work your moneymaker for some guy in Tallahassee. Like, it's not like you both had to download some specific piece of software. Like, she could just do that and you could watch it over the internet, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what is new here that...
I think sending something out via webcam is different than video conferencing. And he's talking about actual video conferencing.
All right.
Even if he hasn't installed the plug...
Sorry.
Even if he hasn't installed the plugin to do video chat yet,
is that true?
I can just go and I can click call him, and something will pop up on his screen saying that Mark is calling him, and in real time he can just go and click that he wants to download the plugin. It takes 10 or 20 seconds, and then we're video chatting, and it's awesome.
This doesn't... I'm not trying to poo-poo the advance of technology, but it seems like basically what he's saying is, if you don't have Skype as a standalone application... I can send you a link, you click on it, and it, I know it's not doing this, but it effectively just takes you to like a web-based version mm-hmm. of Skype where you watch me talking in a little window on your screen, which
yeah.
happens all the time everywhere on every website. So it's like YouTube, basically. It's like a one-way YouTube.
Okay.
I mean, that's, unless there's some element of this that I am missing.
Mm.
So it just, you go to like some web-based version of it as opposed to downloading the application.
Mm. I all I can think about is that this is just something I will never, ever, ever use because I don't want people looking at me
while
I'm talking to
seriously.
Them on my computer.
You have no idea.
I mean, I am about the most unphotogenic person on the planet, and I look as bad as I look in photographs. I look even worse on a webcam.
Uh-huh.
I've seen what I look like on a webcam, and nobody wants to look at that.
Somebody says, by somebody named Thomas Gill, says this is so you don't have to download the software. It is all web based. He said
yeah.
it is a two way chatting using your browser. So that's exactly what I thought. It's funny that actually that this comes out today about Skype and about whatever. I don't have time to talk about this now. I'll talk about it at the beginning of the Rick Emerson Show, which happens... we'll end this show around 1, and then we do a brief musical interlude, and then we'll have the Rick Emerson radio program. So I will just say that this morning, and I should have anticipated this, and I didn't. Unfortunately, I think it all worked out pretty well. I mean, I think I was able to kind of get it together. But I had this sort of... It wasn't like it was sprung on me, but I had this like last minute... I had this unexpected video, this Skype chat this morning that I had to do. And it was a thing where I just, because we use Skype typically just for the audio feature here. We use it for our phone system. And so I was doing an interview this morning via Skype. And then literally with like 7 seconds notice, it was like, so you just get your video camera turned on over there and we'll be good to go. And, you know, it was that suddenly the dun-dun-dun-dun. And I had almost no time to try to make myself look, myself and then also my place of residence, look respectable. This morning, because you don't want to look like a tool.
No.
So I had this whole—it was like this weird, like stealth attack of video Skyping this morning. So we'll talk more about that next hour, and it contains an anecdote which may surprise you. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Over the holiday weekend, the Safeway Waterfront Blues Festival broke every single record in the concert's history, bringing in 95,000 pounds of canned food and $726,000 for the Oregon Food Bank. A statement from the food bank reads, Oregon Food Bank is grateful for the overwhelming generosity of the community during a time of record high need. Close to 1,500 volunteers donated their time to the success of the concert series. Organizers said they have the volunteers' great weather and impressive performer lineup to thank for the record food and the cash donations. A New York City pet store that's surrounded by bars has banned drunken puppy buying. Workers at Le Petit Puppy in Greenwich Village say customers tend to stumble in after happy hour and purchase a dog without thinking. Drunken customers are now forbidden to even hold the puppies because they may drop them.
Well, they should just give them the really ill-behaved puppies, or perhaps those bunnies that bite.
Store owner Dana Rich tells a local radio station that she instructs people who have clearly been drinking to come back the next day.
Yeah.
Employees say they stress how much work it is to own a dog. They say they'd rather lose a sale than send a puppy into an unsafe home.
Because clearly it's a guy who just wants to be able to take the puppy back to the bar and be that guy who's getting his dog drunk.
Or you're just sad. You've just been drinking all by yourself and you're sad. The dog will be my friend. You'll be my friend, won't you?
The dog's just going, oh, Christ.
God, you stink, dude.
Seriously, really? Why does it have to be me? Take Ted. Ted will love you. Why does it have to be, you know, and then that's the guy you...
Damn me and my adorableness.
That is always the guy that you see on YouTube, and he's doing that thing of, like, blowing pot smoke into a paper bag and then putting his, his Maltese's face into it or something. All right, what are you doing over there?
I just poured iced tea down the side of my face.
Okay.
That's it. A bill that would require textbooks for California public schools to include the historical contributions of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people passed the state assembly on Tuesday by a margin of 49 to 25. The proposal passed almost entirely along party lines, with one Republican joining the Democrats to approve the legislation, which is aimed in part at combating the bullying of homosexual students. The bill will now go back to the desk of Democratic Governor Jerry Brown, who has 12 days to either sign or veto the law. So far, the governor is keeping everyone guessing and has made no statements supporting or opposing the issue. If he signs it, school districts will have until January to tweak their curriculums to reflect the changes. It's not yet clear, however, what new material would be added to the state's textbooks, since budget cuts have postponed updating the books until the 2015-16 school year. The law refrains from spelling out how teachers should use any new material on LGBT historical figures in the classroom. The debate in the State House leading up to the vote was marked by emotional, heated rhetoric. Assemblyman Tom Amiano, who is openly gay, told his colleagues, "I don't want to be invisible in a textbook." However, Assemblyman Tim Donnelly of San Bernardino, who's a Republican, said, "As a Christian, I am deeply offended." And he added that the bill promotes, yes, the homosexual agenda.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, Taser Watch, Job Watch, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. And by the way, that is Neiman Fellow Anna Griffin, soon to be studying at Harvard. And Greatest Songs Ever Made. That is all coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com.
Attorneys for Dominic Strauss-Kahn will meet with prosecutors on Wednesday. Newsweek Paris Bureau Chief Christopher Dickey says Strauss-Kahn is seeking to be exonerated on all charges.
The friends of Strauss-Kahn that I've talked to say that he wants some kind of arrangement that he can portray as a complete vindication.
Dickey says the Manhattan District Attorney may be anxious to cut a deal.
He doesn't want to give it up altogether, so he may allow Strauss-Kahn or even encourage Strauss-Kahn to plead guilty to some misdemeanor, which would not involve any kind of jail time.
See, if I was, this is totally the thing where, like, if you were him, you agree not to sue the city for false imprisonment, but they have to do something like carrying you down the streets, you know, like on the backs of several small Indian boys while throwing rose petals at you. And you say, if you do that, I will not file a multi-million dollar lawsuit against the city, which I will almost certainly win.
I like that.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you right now, that's, if I ever get the man ever, you know, puts the screws to me incorrectly, that is the sort of deal that I'm going to cut. Just FYI. In case you ever turn on the television, you say, well, there appears to be several Hindu children dragging Rick Emerson down the street, and he's being showered with the petals of the country's finest flowers. Why is that? You'll know.
A federal civil servant who says he took 11 weeks of sick leave because his colleagues wore too much perfume and cologne wants all of his sick time allotment restored, claiming his employer failed to accommodate him. Terrence Juba, who processes immigration applications for the Department of Citizenship and Immigration in Vegreville, Alberta, Canada, said his debilitating sense sensitivity was triggered by certain fragrances he detected in the office, requiring him to use far more than the 187 and a half hours of paid sick leave allowed under Public Service Alliance of Canada collective bargaining agreement. When Mr. Juba put up a sign saying that his desk area was a scent-free zone, his colleagues did not respond well, he told a Public Service Labor Relations Board. The board said, summarizing evidence, they took the view that they were entitled to wear deodorant and use soap, and in profane terms, they told him to mind his own business.
Well, it doesn't sound like he's talking about deodorant and soap, though. Sounds like he's talking about perfume and like some guy who drowns himself in the English leather.
Now, apparently this is one of those guys that, that's one of those people that claims to be so sensitive to scent that he can smell people's deodorant.
Oh.
And that people shouldn't wear deodorant around him because it will make him, like, violently ill. The policy, after his complaints, the office did impose a scent-free policy, which unfortunately was introduced on April Fool's Day in 2006. The policy was sent to all the employees and said, respecting a scent-free policy means ceasing to wear or use items that have a scent attached to them by artificial means. 4 months after the policy implementation, which he said was largely ignored, Mr. Juba filed his grievance to refill his exhausted sick day bank. He testified he suffered sensitivity all his life. His symptoms can include headaches, runny nose, nosebleeds, lack of concentration, and irritability. The government, however, said it did everything in its power to accommodate Mr. Juba. He was moved to different locations in the building. He was bought an air purifier. The airflow in the office was tested. The manager called an external consultant to speak with the staff.
Where was this at?
This was in Canada.
Okay, this was clearly not anywhere in the United States.
And to compensate for the negative balance in his sick leave, he was allowed to work overtime, which could be exchanged for additional credits. He worked the overtime but chose pains. And then finally he just said, you know, I want all my sick leave back because people use soap.
You know, seriously, never mind. I don't even care that much. I was going to start a whole thing, but it doesn't matter. It's Canada. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor, who will introduce, I believe, the entertainment news.
Yes!
Hey, look at that. Here's your entertainment news for... Sounded really, really happy just now. This is your entertainment news for Wednesday.
Forbes' annual list of Hollywood's top paid actresses has Angelina Jolie and Sarah Jessica Parker topping the group, as both of them made $30 million during the May 2010 to 11 period.
How is that possible? Well, she has that scent that came out. I think she has a perfume or something, Sarah Jessica Parker does.
Yeah, and there have been a couple of Sex and the City movies. And and I believe she won the trifecta at... Never mind. I was going to do a horse race joke, and it just failed.
I see.
Tying for third are Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, who both made $28 million, followed by Larry Crown actress Julia Roberts. Inception actor... although you shouldn't just limit him to that, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and his online production company, Hit Record, are working with IT Books to release The Tiny Book of Tiny Stories, a series of books whose first installment will come out in December. Contributors can't enter their submission through July. Gordon-Levitt said in a statement, "It's very exciting for me now, more than 45,000 artists strong," speaking about Hit Record, his company, "to be working with IT Books and HarperCollins to bring Tiny Stories to the mainstream. A dream come true, really."
That's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who was, I think, first introduced to the mainstream movie-going audience with the movie Brick.
Yes.
Which is awesome, by the way.
A great, great movie if you've never seen that. Oh, Kiefer Sutherland is single, ladies. He's split with his longtime girlfriend, Siobhan Bonnevier. Sutherland has two children from his marriage to Camelia Kath. I guess you're supposed to keep that in mind in case, you know, you're thinking of dating him. Reuters reports the 36-year-old man who was allegedly stalking Paris Hilton was arrested Monday after he was seen on the beach checking out her Malibu residence. James Rainford, who was ordered to stay at least 200 yards away from Hilton after trespassing on her Hollywood Hills home last year, also attacked Hilton's ex-boyfriend in April outside a courthouse.
Of all the people to stalk, why would it be Paris Hilton? I mean, honestly. I have only known one guy in my entire life who thought that Paris Hilton was hot and thought that she was completely and totally bangable. And that person, by the way, longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Show, that person was Richard Nunn, newscaster for what was then the WB here in Portland and now at Local 6, I believe, in Florida, and who really is just like a great guy, but really just perverse in the deepest, deepest way. He's the only guy I ever knew that was like, she is so hot. And he would say things like, "I would bang her like a screen door in a hurricane." And, you know, and it's like, you know, whatever. But that is really the exception that proves the rule, I think. Maybe he was stalking her for other purposes.
Maybe.
Maybe it wasn't out of hotness.
No. Lady Antebellum singer Hillary Scott is engaged to drummer Chris Tyrell, as Tyrell proposed to the 25-year-old over the 4th of July weekend in East Tennessee. Scott told People, "Chris proposed can I do an accent? Does
sure.
she have an accent?
Who?
The Lady Antebellum chick.
Sure.
"Chris proposed exactly the way I've always dreamed. Our families were close by, but it was just us out on a beautiful deck overlooking a lake in East Tennessee. We had been on a hike, and in our workout clothes, he hit the knee. We feel so blessed by God that he sent us each other, and we are looking forward to forever together." They met in early 2010 on a Tim McGraw tour.
All right. I wish I could retroactively revoke the permission to do
that
the accent.
That was not my best Southern accent.
No.
No. I've done better. Sharon Stone, Christopher Walken, John Turturro, Edie Falco, and Alicia Silverstone will star in God's Behaving Badly. The picture centers on several Greek gods living in New York whose lives intersect with a young couple. The gods include Aphrodite, played by Sharon Stone, Artemis, Edie Falco, Hades, John Turturro, and Zeus, played by Christopher Walken.
Okay, that could be fantastic.
That could, in fact, be
the best thing ever. Did I miss who's writing or directing that?
No, you didn't. It doesn't say.
I instinctively want it to be Woody Allen, but that probably won't be the case.
No. Animal rights activists have sued a Southern California company that provided an elephant that was used in the movie Water for Elephants. The suit was filed last week in Los Angeles federal court against Have Trunk Will Travel of Perris, California. It claims that the business defrauded two moviegoers who believed the elephant used in Water for Elephants was properly treated. The suit claims the business used electric shock devices on the elephant. Have Trunk Will Travel rents six elephants for movies, weddings, fairs, and other special events. Company owners Gary and Carrie Johnson deny the abuse allegations. Carrie Johnson told the Riverside Press Enterprise that the business has a stellar record of animal care and stands by its training methods.
And I would tend to instinctively believe the animal owners in this case, because you got to figure you can't tase, blah, 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 elephants never forget. Can't tase an elephant that many times before it's just going to decide to trunk you.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to be scraped off the bottom of one of its feet. I mean, that's an animal that you probably don't want to cross.
That is all the entertainment.
Excellent. There you go. Your entertainment news. Keelan would like to observe that, in his opinion, Paris Hilton probably smells like cheese, ammonia, and chitlins.
Oh, sure. I'm not going to read this because we really don't care, but I just got an email.
Is there breaking news?
No, not really. It's a press release email. The subject is Kings of Leon documentary to premiere on Showtime.
Wow. Okay, thank you for sharing that with me. Really? Okay. I can't fathom. I mean, my own personal experiences, the ways in which Kings of Leon intersected with my life and some of the listeners' lives notwithstanding, I can't imagine being a big enough fan of Kings of Leon that you would want or need or require in any way or desire, with even the slightest bit of interest, a documentary about them.
Okay, well, I take it back about not reading it. Now I am. Here we go. Dateline Los Angeles.
Oh, God, hold on. Let me just, yeah. Okay.
Dateline Los Angeles. When three teenage brothers and their cousin rebelled against their strict religious Southern upbringing to form a rock band named Kings of Leon, their humble backstory garnered almost as much attention as their music.
Lie.
Many questioned if they were really related and if rumors of their father being a Pentecostal preacher were true. Since then, the band has achieved worldwide Grammy, trademark, award-winning success. And now the mystery and myths behind these budding rock legends will be laid to rest in the documentary Tallahena Sky, The Story of Kings of Leon.
I hate the world.
Premiering on Showtime on Sunday, August 21st.
There is no God.
The documentary kicks off at the annual Follow Will family reunion in the backwoods of Tallahena, Oklahoma, where the boys return to their roots and unwind with their family. First-time director and family friend Stephen C. Mitchell weaves personal home videos, unedited interviews, and behind-the-scenes footage of the band's journey from their small-town beginnings, spent in poverty and touring the Bible Belt with their father, a Pentecostal evangelist minister, and their devout mother, to living the rock star dream.
Okay. Once again, a documentary about Kings of Leon. When is that going to be premiering so I don't miss it?
Sunday, August 21st on Showtime.
Okay, make sure that I'm home. Maybe next we can get a Dishwalla documentary. You know, in 9 parts done by Ken Burns. Lots of sepia tone photographs in it. Jesus. All right. So there you go. We got about 90 seconds left here.
Okay. Two Royal Canadian Mounted Police officers pleaded guilty in British Columbia on Monday to assault in connection with a brawl with Hell's Angels members in August 2009. The officers were given an absolute discharge and neither will have a criminal record. The brawl happened during the August long weekend when the officers were off duty and in Kelowna for a bachelor party. At a downtown strip club, they spotted a full-patch member of the Hell's Angels. As they left the club, they decided to bump into the biker. The bump was minimal, and McDonald apologized. But the bump provoked a brawl out on the street between 7 off-duty police officers and 20 men wearing Hell's Angels and Throttle Lockers colors.
Fantastic.
McDonald spent the night in the hospital with a broken nose, concussion, and 8 stitches to the head. A Kelowna man was charged with assault causing bodily harm in connection. While the RCMP constables will not have criminal records, they will have to pay a $500 victim fine surcharge.
Let's do one more view of something that's that is minuscule, that is tiny.
Tiny.
Yeah, infinitesimal.
I got nothing that's tiny. Nothing at all.
Okay.
We're done.
All right, we'll
let's just call it done.
There's
nothing. By the way, that Kings of Leon documentary, produced by the Kings of Leon.
Really? It's hard to believe. What's it called again?
Tallahena. Is it Tallahena or Tallahina? Whatever their town is from.
I don't know.
Tallahena Sky, : the story of Kings of Leon.
That's great. That's wonderful. All right. And with that, mercifully, we can... Wait. There we go. Excellent. Fantastic. With that, we bring the curtain down on another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, who was right about pandas and marsupials and wombats, as was done. Executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Taser Watch, Job Watch, and columnist Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. You can listen for 32 cents a day at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. We will see you again tomorrow. Don't forget this program is available later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow at noon for another episode. See you then.